National Association of Broadcasters 1997 Annual Conference, Setting the Pace of Convergence, April 5th through 10th, 1997. We bring you live to Las Vegas, Nevada, where this program is just underway.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 1997 Broadcast Engineering Conference and this morning's session on radio technical regulatory issues. We have three panels lined up for you this morning. The first is on pirate radio, beginning now. And at 10 a.m., we'll move on to grandfathered short-spaced FM stations. And at 11, we'll address AM technical regulatory issues. Before we dive into pirate radio, I have a few quick reminders for you. Today, the technology luncheon will be held in the Baron Room of the Las Vegas Hilton starting at 12:15 p.m. The keynote speaker will be Joel Brinkley, the New York Times political editor. He's a winner of a Pulitzer Prize and numerous other national journalism and writing awards, and he's going to be speaking about, among other things, his new book, Defining Vision, regarding the development of digital television. And also, when the conference sessions end today at 6 p.m., there will be the annual amateur radio operators reception. So those of you who are amateur radio operators may want to head on over to the Ballroom C at the Las Vegas Hilton. That event is sponsored by Richardson Electronics and iMac. Now let's get into our discussion on pirate radio. We've assembled an all-star cast for you here today. I think if you looked all over the country, you'd be hard-pressed to find any four people who are more qualified to talk about the issues involved in pirate radio than the folks we have here today. To my right, John DeVecca from LPB was unable to make it due to a family emergency today, but in his stead, his colleague at LPB, Dick Burden, is filling in for him. Dick is a graduate of the RCA Institutes. He's a member of the National Stereophonic Radio Committee, a member of the Ad Hoc Committee for the Study of Television Sound, a member of the National Radio Systems Committee, a fellow of the Audio Engineering Society, and a certified professional broadcast engineer. To Dick's right is Bill Ruck. Bill is a native San Franciscan who attended the University of San Francisco and was chief engineer of that school's non-commercial FM station, KUSF, when it first went on the air. He put together KUSF's first transmitter and has been very involved in Bay Area engineering ever since. In 1978, Mr. Ruck became engineering manager of KFOG FM. KNBR AM also became his responsibility in 1989. He has participated on various NAB technical committees and provided valuable support to the DAB field testing program that was carried out in the Bay Area over the past couple of years. He is rebuilding a cabin in the Santa Cruz Mountains and spends his other spare time restoring Indian motorcycles. To Bill's right is Beverly Baker. Beverly Baker is the chief of the Compliance and Information Bureau at the FCC. Beverly joined the FCC in 1979 and held various positions as a staff attorney in the Common Carrier Bureau. She became chief of the legal branch of the Tariff Division of the Common Carrier Bureau in 1984. In 1987, she became legal assistant to the chief of the Private Radio Bureau, which has since been reorganized into the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau. And in 1988, she was appointed deputy chief of the Private Radio Bureau. In 1994, Ms. Baker was appointed chief of the Compliance and Information Bureau, which, as many people know, used to be called the Field Operations Bureau. She received her BA degree from Denison University and her JD from Cornell University. She is a member of the Bar of the District of Columbia, of Court of Appeals, and of the Supreme Court of Ohio. She and her husband, Don, live in Washington, D.C. And last but certainly not least, to Beverly's right, is Jack Goodman. Jack works for the National Association of Broadcasters as the Vice President Policy Counsel. He is responsible for developing and coordinating NAB regulatory and legislative policy objectives. He joined NAB in 1990 as Special Counsel and has worked in the areas of cable television regulation, the economic relationship between cable and over-the-air television, the financing of broadcast stations, broadcast ownership regulation, and the regulation of political broadcasting. And he's here with us today because Jack is the point man at NAB on the issue of pirate radio stations. Mr. Goodman has been one of the principal NAB attorneys involved in the court challenges to the 1992 Cable Act, and he's been dancing in the streets ever since the Supreme Court ruling last week. Mr. Goodman is a graduate of the Johns Hopkins University and the University of North Carolina Law School. He was for many years a member of the Board of Directors of the Law Alumni Association of the University of North Carolina and a member of the Advisory Committee on Rules of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. He has also chaired the Federal Communications Bar Association's Committee on Judicial Practice. The format of our presentations this morning, we're going to start off giving each person an opportunity to make some opening comments. Dick's going to talk a little bit first about what are the legitimate uses of a low-power, unlicensed broadcast band transmitter, since his company is in the business of selling those types of transmitters to companies who use them for legitimate purposes. After Dick speaks, we'll move on to the other. Bill's going to talk some about his vast experience with pirate radios in the San Francisco Bay Area, and Beverly's going to talk about what the FCC has been doing with regard to pirate radio. And then Jack will make a few comments about what NAB's has done to help support the FCC's efforts to get after these pirate radio broadcasters. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Dick.
Okay. Thank you. Looking at the history of low-power radio, we go back into the late 30s, 39 and later, and where we started carrier current. Carrier current, to those who do not know, is the practice of putting the RF signal on top of the power wiring so that it follows throughout a building. And probably the most well-known, where it's used in many, many college campuses. That's been the most legitimate use that I know of. We've used low power in many, many drive-in theaters. We've used low power for language translation in churches. We've used low power for language for services where people want to go to church but do not want to go inside. I've done this with a number of churches, and it's surprising to me that people don't want to go inside. They'd rather sit outside in their cars. Probably the most well-known of this is the Garden Grove Community Church, better known as the Crystal Cathedral. We have about 5,000 feet of radiating cable buried in the parking lot, so that if you don't want to go into the service, you can sit outside and the good father can talk to you. We have used radiating cable and the entrance to theme parks such as Walt Disney's Epcot Center and Walt Disney World. There are a number that I can't probably remember all of them, but those are the most well-known. Another legitimate reason, use of low-power radio is that of inside sports stadiums. Those of you AM broadcasters that have problem getting your signal through the thick walls of inside sports arenas realize this problem. We have used radiating cable in many of these sports stadiums, usually hung by the from the catwalk in the ceiling. Most of these are AM, however, there is one FM, which was put in just recently last fall. All of these contain their signals inside the building to what the FCC considers acceptable as far as the rules are concerned. There are, in the FM, in the realm of radiating systems from antennas, there is, of course, what's well known as the Traveler's Information Service, which is a licensed situation. But there are Part 15 uses. There are 100 milliwatt AM transmitters, which are really only designed to go a few hundred feet. However, some people put them in a manner that they far and exceed those two or 300 feet. The rules state basically that you're allowed a roughly 3-meter antenna. I like to work in feet. Roughly you have an 8-foot antenna and about 2 foot of ground lead. And that's supposed to be a non-radiating ground. And some people just run that down the side of a building and you have a nice big long antenna and you get out a little bit further. Again, these are not in accordance with the rules. There are FM, I call them equivalent type transmitters, again, which limit their field to 250 microvolts at a distance of 3 meters. They're used a lot in language translations and other type, maybe for the hard of hearing. We have both cable, induction cable systems, and these low power transmitters are usable for language translation or hard of hearing people. There are a lot of good, legitimate uses for these things, but you can't destroy the spectrum when you're trying to do this. And this is my concern. We've had a number of people come into the booth. Well, I only want to get out 1 or 2 miles. I'm saying, you can't do that. It's not that we can't provide them with the equipment to do that. It's not right to do that. And we try to explain the rules and regulations so that people understand them. There's no way we can stop pirate radio. I've had a number of occasions where people have found a transmitter that's no longer used in a university or the like, and they'll come and they'll want to know how to make an antenna tuned to this thing, and I'm saying, no, you can't do that. But it's interesting to talk to some of these people. They have a lot of conviction in what they want to do. They believe it's right. We tell them that you can't be involved in broadcasting if you're going to confuse or destroy the spectrum. And that's my personal belief. I talk to them a lot. They don't necessarily listen.
Okay. Bill, you want to go next since you're...
We're going to be sequential. I've been asked to make some comments about the unlicensed operation in the Semscope Bay Area, and I'm going to make some general comments about where I'm coming from so you understand me a little bit, describe some of the pirate, the more major ones in the